Hello everyone, I'm Sri Banerjee, a student in the Criminal Justice Program, and the title of this is Criminal Profiling of Dorothea Puentes. My professor is Dr. Brent, and this is again the Criminal Profiling course. So let's go ahead and get started. First of all, I wanted to mention that she actually had a long life between January 9th, 1929 to March 27, 2011. And her nickname or moniker was the Death House Landlady. And I'll reveal to you why this is the case. This is her mugshot, and something that you might note here. She used to hide under the ruse that she's a frail elderly woman. That would allow people to open up and provide the assistance that she required or that she wanted to have everybody give. On the right-hand side is a shovel, and there's an interesting story behind this. When the police officers came to Puentes's door and knocked on the door, they asked why are there mounds of dirt in the backyard, and she mentioned that there's really nothing there. And when they asked for permission from her, she allowed them with shovels, their own shovels, to dig. In fact, this is interesting. One of the individuals needed a shovel, and she even lent the shovel. And of course, the rest of the story is that once they started digging, the first thing that they thought was a tree root, actually ended up being a human femur. And subsequently, they actually found more and more bodies than they had expected initially. So this is actually something that went to the that was lent to the law officers. So just going back into the history, the initial history of Dorothea Puentes when she was a child. She was born in Redlands, California, in the year 1929, and her parents were her initial name was Dorothea Helen Gray, and this was from her parents named Trudy Gray and Jesse James Gray. They had a big family. Dorothea did. She was actually one of seven children. They were a poor family, and this leads to some of the things that I'll be talking about in subsequent slides. Dorothea's father was a cotton picker and also had a lot of mental illnesses. I'm gonna give you some specific details about what that was. So here is some ways to understand Dorothea's and contextualize Dorothea as an adult. Is that addictions and abuse, substance use was prevalent within the family, and there phenomena where some of these traits, some of these learned social traits, are passed down intergenerationally. So Dorothea, in her early years, had been abused by her parents. Alcoholism contributed to this abuse and trauma, and then neglect from her parents, illicit drug and alcohol addiction. So a lot of effort was putting into taking illicit drugs and alcohol addictions, and so that actually took away from the care they could have given Dorothea. Substance use and crime are actually something that is observed very often. For instance, the tripartite theory that was developed in the 80s that explains kind of the interconnectedness between substance use and crime. And even the situation, we see that kind of we observe this in Dorothea's life. Now, this is important. Dorothea was exposed to suicidal ideation by father. Not only ideation, I would go further, attempts, putting a gun to his head in front of his children. And this is traumatizing for a young child to be seeing their father repeatedly do this. At the end, Dorothea's father died from tuberculosis, and due to this income loss, there was a chain reaction where Dorothea's mother had to have sex work, had to join sex work, and she lost custody of her children in 1938. And again, this is a tragic part of Dorothea's life. She was only 8 or 9, and she went to the orphanage. And in that orphanage, she was sexually abused and assaulted. So, as you can see, some of these early influences later on led to the consequences that we observe. So how were the teen years of Dorothea? She had quite a few marriages over the years, and you'll see this in I'll talk about this later. Her first marriage, though, she got married at 16, and this was in 1945 to Fred McFall. They had two daughters, however, she decided not to keep them. And so she had two daughters in 1946 and 1948. After that birth of second daughter, she sent one daughter away to live with relatives and the other to adoption. So here's the starting of unfolding of crimes. The first arrest in 1948 was for forging checks, resulting in 4 months jail time and probation. Consequently, her husband left her. In 1952, she remarried to Axel Brand Johansson, having a poor relationship. So this is oftentimes typical to see people repeatedly when they haven't had attachment, formed proper attachment during their childhood, then a lot of times they have trouble attaching in their relationships. So they go through relationships, turbulent ones, much more rapidly than other people. And that's tragic. That's a tragic consequence of childhood influences. The other thing to note, and I'm going to be going into this, actually, let me talk about this a little later. Dorothea started to gamble money away and got involved in extramarital affairs. She was again arrested in 1960. And this is where I'll make the point that a lot of people, they go to jail and for whatever reason, for whatever crime they commit, and then once they come out, a lot of times they'll commit crimes and then go to jail again, and this is called recidivism. And you'll in the literature see research after research about needing to address recidivism and prison reform and how our justice system works. I'm going to again mention this later. So the subsequent marriage ended in divorce again in 1966. Dorothea Puentes started to, here is when the evolution went to committing more crimes, more heinous crimes. Dorothea started a boarding house in 1966. In 1968, Dorothea married Roberto Jose Puente, with the marriage lasting less than 2 years due to accusations of domestic violence against Dorothea. This is something that was stated, however, never corroborated. She actually has established herself in the community, taking in those who were less fortunate or vulnerable. She then remarried Pedro Angel Montavo, and that lasted only a week. Additional criminal activity, and you'll see an escalation here. 1978, Dorothea was convicted of forgery for 34 state and federal checks from her tenants. Subsequently, she received 5 years of probation and $4,000 in fees. And then 1982, Dorothea drugged and robbed Malcolm McKenzie, and she was convicted in 1982 for multiple grand theft charges and spent some time in prison, but was released on parole. And then after release in 1985, she moved to 1426 F Street. So then here's where the murders start. 1982, Ruth Monroe, who was said to be the first victim, was found dead from overdose in the care of Dorothea. And another point that I want to make here is that female serial killers oftentimes use poisoning rather than more violent means to commit murder. So these are patterns that you start to see, and then one of the other characteristics a lot of times is the escalation of the murders that are committed, or from crimes evolving from theft to now committing murder. And so later on, Ruth was murdered by found to be murdered by Dorothea. Another victim, Everson Theodore Gilmuth, was murdered and found by the river, only to know that Dorothea was the one who killed him many years later. Interestingly, many of the mounds a lot of the dragging of the bodies and a lot of that is very strenuous, trying to drag them down the stairs and all of that. So some hypothesize that there was an accomplice that helped Dorothea out in order to commit murder and some of the other acts of crime. So at this point, tenants of Dorothea were experiencing a murdering spree. In the years between 1982 and 1988, Dorothea started to murder even more, and again we see the escalation. Many victims were poisoned and buried during this time. The victims included tenants who lived at the boarding house she operated, 1426 F Street in Sacramento. The additional names of victims are Ruth Monroe, Leona Carpenter, Alvaro, Bert Gonzalez Montoya, Dorothy Miller, Benjamin Fink, James Gallup, and Vera Faye Martin. In this segment, what I'm going to be going over are some of the major criminological theories that are out there and how this applies to Dorothea Puentes's life. So, as I had mentioned about Agnew strain theory, I'm not going to go too much into what Dorothea was experiencing, more so the theory. So the general strain theory, as the name suggests, is a stressor or strain that the individual is feeling during a stressful situation. So that can be on an individual level, loss of a job, or sudden changes in parenting, like Dorothy had become an orphan. These are all stressors, this could be also societally not living the American dream, and of course that's a stressor that many people feel, even though they do feel these things, not everyone commits murder. So these are some of the concepts to keep in mind. So crime and delinquency are caused by presence of negative emotion, not being successful. That's another part of strain. So these are all examples of some of the things that lead to strain in Agnew's strain theory. Now, again, applying this to Dorothea's life, there were several turbulent marriages, and I'm going to go over this in the subsequent slide as well. In this slide, I'm going to apply this to Dorothea's life, the general strain theory. If you think about poverty, basically most of her life, her childhood, she experienced poverty. Her father died initially, or died of tuberculosis, and that put a lot of strain into the family. So the mother had to find sex work, and so afterwards she was orphaned, and in the orphanage she experienced sexual assault and abuse. So again, that's childhood instability, and that's a source of strain. Abuse, father threatened to kill himself, and then again, poverty. I went over that. So now, looking at life course theory, there are some components of this that are important to understand. There's early life experiences, developmental and situational factors, trajectories including risk and protective factors, and then socioeconomic disadvantage on social isolation, as well as protective factors such as resilience and adaptability. So on one hand, you have social isolation and due to socioeconomic disadvantage, and there's a sense of isolation, not only from people, but not having adequate resources. So people need communities where there's more cohesiveness and resilience and adaptability. Now, applying life course theory, Puente's life was characterized by a series of challenges and setbacks, including poverty, homelessness, and legal troubles. Events such as leaving foster care, entering adulthood, experiencing financial difficulties, may have influenced her decision making and behavior, shaping her criminal trajectory. Puente may have learned criminal behavior through observing others being rewarded or praised for similar actions. What I can tell you about the foster care system is that when someone gets there, a lot of times people experience sexual abuse and other things, and unfortunately, that was the case for Puentes's life. So this is kind of these are the kinds of trauma, so to speak, that emerge and shape a person's adult life. The final theory I'm going to be going over is differential reinforcement theory, and this was something that was introduced by sociologist Ronald Akers in the 70s. He purported that individuals learn deviant or criminal behavior through a process of social learning, and behavior is reinforced or discouraged by the consequences it produces. So let's apply differential reinforcement theory to the application of Dorothea. Successfully, she committed fraud and theft, which resulted in financial gain and a sense of power or control over victims. So this was something that was a positive consequence of what she did from her perspective. The reward she gained from her criminal activities, such as financial gain or feelings of empowerment, reinforced her behavior and increased the probability of its recurrence. So these are the types of behavior that leads to recidivism, increased rates of recidivism. She lacked legitimate opportunities for success or felt marginalized by conventional society in some ways. And then after the birth of her second daughter, Dorothea sent one daughter away to live with relatives and the other to adoption. And again, kind of revisiting some of the concepts that we went over, a lot of the problems with attachment that you see in later life, where she does not keep her children. She gives away her children, and this is the type of abandonment that she felt as she was growing up. So in summary, Dorothea Puentes had a certain type of modus operandi, where she would poison her victims and then drag them down into the garden and dig and bury the bodies. There's ways to understand, of course, what went on in Dorothea's life of crime and how her early life may have led to a life of crime. And then these theories allow for better understanding of Dorothy's contextual situational conditions. I hope this has made some sense. Thank you for listening. Here are the references.